Hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast report episode. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm once again joined by Viv Vermaak, journalist, feral philosopher, and public speaker. Viv, this week's topic is Cape Independence, which is a thing that has sort of bubbled online for quite some time. Why did you pick this topic out of all the topics?
Nicholas, it relates to a discussion you and I had on a previous podcast report, and we were talking about Helen Zille running for Joburg mayor, and we were both a bit irked, can I say, about Tom Eaton's writings on this matter in Times Live, I think, where he was terrible about Joburg. And I think we thought he was very unkind and very vicious, and we defended Joburg, but we both moved down to Cape Town. So I thought, okay, maybe my thinking on this matter is not as clear as it should be. So while I'm living in Cape Town now, if I was asked to vote, how would I vote? Let me see if I can clarify my thinking. So that's why I delved into Cape succession. How would I vote? And I consulted the podcast to get to an opinion.
Well, you know, they say hypocrisy is the tribute that vice pays to virtue. So, you know, maybe there's something instructive in the fact that I think we share similarish views on this topic, and yet we both ended up moving from Gauteng to the Cape. But anyway, go ahead, please. The floor is yours. Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay, so is Cape Town or Cape Independence a viable and reasonable idea, or is it just giving the SA Rainbow a new coat of paint because the old one lacks a bit of luster? And I wanted to see that if there was a referendum and if I had to vote on Cape Independence, how would I eventually vote to come to a firmer position to myself? My first stop on a podcast or on opinions is often Frans Cronier. He's one of my favorite commentators, and he's a good barometer for me, not just as a forecaster and a person with good opinions, but he has a great turn in being a South African. He has a great knowledge of all our different cultures and political systems and a lot of respect for it, including that of the ANC. He's a forecaster, a futurist, and I like the way that the guy handles issues. He's also started a new podcast platform, by the way, called The Common Sense. So I listened to some of his opinions on that. And the highlight of watching something that's new, I started watching it when it was quite new, is that as a podcast viewer, you're witness to the teething problems. Whereas if you're listening to it on radio or just reading the little summary in a newspaper, you wouldn't see what's going on behind the scenes. Now, Cronier boasts, he introduces his platform like this, brand new tech-based media startup company, world-class data analysis and use of AI-powered information sourcing. But then they get something very entry-level wrong. So for the podcast viewers watching the first episodes, they put the microphone between the camera, which is where you are, and him. So what you see when you're listening to Cronier is this. And you're like, but where is this? And the delight of seeing that happening is, despite this era that we're living in digital perfection and technology, that there's still one area of podcasting that can't be AI'd, and that's human judgment. All they had to do was move the microphone somewhere else, or move the camera, quite frankly, or put the microphone here. But it was so charming for the podcast viewer to be amused that in this age of digital and AI, that we can still get things like that wrong. So thank you guys from The Common Sense. 10 extra points just for that. Another startup, oops, which I'm sure they fit by now, is that the host was clearly the first time he's doing it. And he was using two screens. Again, you can see this because it's a podcast. So he was introducing the show, but reading the words, which were scripted, but he didn't know the words. So there's this darting, and he's talking, and very clumsy and awkward, but very delightful for the viewer who thinks this is entertainment. And I'm sitting there looking at this light, and I'm thinking, here am I, okay, yes, now so mooi en jonk, maar jy moet jou woorde leer. So he has to learn his words. I'm sure he has by now, and has to introduce his name. Otherwise, you don't know who this guy is. Anyway, so these were great startup oopses for the viewer because it adds to the delight of watching them. But on Cape Independence, this is what Frans Cronier says, and it's a view he's had consistently over the years, not only on The Common Sense, but on business. So he says, The trend shows that Cape independence is a certainty. That's the trend. If not de jure, then de facto. Okay, now that is one of those Nostradamus-y type statements that you must just look at twice, because that type of statement ensures that whatever he predicts must be right. If not actually, then technically. He positions succession as a sort of a broad category of balkanization, or enclavement, where people automatically start moving into enclaves like security complexes, which I've done for years already. But that's not what people like myself and Phil Craig of Cape Exit are interested in. We wanted his views on Cape independence as a separate country, a separate constitutional entity. I mean, that's always something that I find quite amusing when listening to these futurists, is how they can say things that might mean something, but mean something else, or it means nothing. And you always look for five-syllable words and Latin. Then you know you must listen to the statement twice just to see what he means. So that's his view on it will definitely happen. If not in fact, if not in law, then actually. So the right-leaning podcasts, but then he says something else. Cornelius. So when he speaks to Alec Hogg, sorry, that was a bit of a messy segue. So when he speaks to Alec Hogg, then he says the trend is definitely that the Cape will succeed de jure de facto balkanization, definitely. But South Africa is an unpredictable country, so it might happen some way that's totally different. So the future is blue, but maybe green. The right-leaning podcasters appear more certain on the issue, and I've noticed this as a trend on the right-wing podcast, that they're much more fiery, very emotional. They get very excited about things. And in conversation, Aaron Roots and Phil Craig of the Cape Independence Movement, the advocacy group, hammer the point that the Western Cape has the right to succeed. They have a constitutional right to succeed. And they're correct. People do have the right to succeed. Even now, our municipalities have constitutionalities that allow them to be a lot more independent than what they actually are claiming. Phil Craig says, why succeed? Because we have problems in South Africa, but the problems of the Western Cape are different to the rest of the problems in the rest of the country. Also, we never voted for the ANC since 1994. The Western Cape, we have a right to be governed by the people we voted for, and it's not the ANC. And these are fair points, and these are reasonable arguments, and this is the emotive ticket that they're running on in elections and to push for Cape independence. Now, the left-leaning podcasts say, no, wait a minute, the right-leaning podcasts are basically sublimating racist bigotries and then passing it off as constitutional arguments or ideology. They feel it's just a typical us versus them type of positioning, which leaves a bad taste in the mouth. Rebecca Davies of the Daily Maverick says that the president could call for a referendum, which he could, but even then, on Cape succession, but even then it might not be legally binding because there's a lot of other laws and a lot of other things that will have to fall into place to allow for an independent Cape. She says it is simply impossible to imagine a world where South African politics and the law align to allow one of the nine provinces to assert itself as a separate country, especially since even parties like the DA do not support the idea. She goes as far as to say, people like the Cape Exit are selling people a pipe dream. And there's a lot in that position that I also agree with. So my last podcast pit stop was to go to the biggest podcast in the country, Mac G's Podcast and Chill. Now, this is a podcast that has massive numbers, 1.6 million just for its YouTube viewers by itself. So it's massive. This is the pulse of our nation and of the youth and the majority of our population. Now, Podcast and Chill is not a political, channel. They don't claim to be about politics or social commentary, but these people are in tune. They are aware, and the people featured on it are always successful. You can assume from the demographics that they are from a culture and a legacy which will tend to be more communist, socialist, ANC type of voterish, which is their right, but it does reflect the majority of the population. And you couldn't have a podcast more the opposite of the NG Kerk tipe oompie like Frans Cronje in his shirt and the baardjie and the snorretjie and the sober, spreadsheeted, straightforward analysis than these guys, because the studio is full of laughter and alcohol. I'm sure they drink some while they're doing it. But if you think they haven't thought their position through, you are wrong. These people are clever, they're insightful, and often guests are comics, comedians. And comedians are a special breed of commentator because not only do they have to understand an issue and absorb it, they have to make it funny. So by the time you hear their opinion on anything, it is very distilled. And on this episode, and we listened to Trevor Gumbe, who is a quite a controversial and outspoken guy. And he was asked by one of the people about how terrible it is about that people who live in Cape Town, the locals, can't afford rent in their own city anymore, and they're being pushed out by foreigners. And Gumbe said, So what? Shame. If you can't afford to pay the rent, move somewhere else. Move to a place where you can afford the rent. And people were quite shocked because they thought this was unfair. But Gumbe is in favor of open borders, especially for Africans. And he made this point and he said, I am paying my rates and taxes and levies. I'm paying them. What have you done to deserve living next to me if you can't? And he goes further and says, I've worked very hard to not be able to see my neighbors, and they him. So in that statement, he perfectly encapsulates the type of enclavement that Cronje speaks about and a type of libertarian independence and freedom of movement wrapped in a socialist genre, which I thought was just quite lovely and quite surprising for me. But ultimately, for my decision, it didn't come down to the entertainers or the podcasters or the futurist. I spoke to a meticulous bureaucrat. He's an urban planner. He's worked for the World Bank and governments in South Africa as well as the rest of Africa to help them with infrastructure development and urban planning. And he showed me the stats. So he showed me the immigration stats into the Cape and how it is impossible for formal development to match the rate of informal immigration. Secondly, he showed me the collapse of Stats SA. So even if the Cape succeeded, you wouldn't know who's a citizen and who's not. Because remember, the new citizens of the new Cape would have to pay taxes to the new state as well, probably, as to the federal state, which is the rest of South Africa. We're going to have to pay for the border, which has to be erected and patrolled. But we wouldn't get out of the starting block because we wouldn't know who lives here and who doesn't because our stats are too bad. So this is the type of stumbling blocks that people who want to vote for Cape Secession will have to consider. Also, he said that the laws, the referendum is the easiest thing to cover in terms of the laws, but we have so many laws, central government laws, blocking such a process and making it virtually impossible for municipalities or provinces to succeed. And lastly, he warned me that we don't have a succession plan for our urban planners. So let us say we vote referendum, yippee, 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 and everybody, the Cape is independent. To administer something like that takes people who understand socioeconomics, politics, and urban planning, and we don't have them. The current crop is about to retire, and nobody else has been taught the vast complexities of integrating urban planning with political will. And that, I think, was the final death knell for me. So, what do I think will happen in the future if I'm going to be a futurist? Well, I would say that the trend shows that the future is blue. It is definitely blue, unless it is yellow. Then the future is green. And if anything I'm saying doesn't happen, it has already happened. Okay, that's my prediction. In terms of my vote, I will support the idea of a referendum on Cape Succession. I think popular votes are a great idea. They're fun. You argue with people, it reinforces the idea of a participative democracy. But I want to live in this country as it is. I want to feel positive about my contribution in a place as it is. not as it should have been, could have been, or might be in circumstances that don't exist. So I want to make peace with my reality here and be fine with it. So if there was a vote, if I could vote for Cape secession or not, my opinion is that Cape independence is like putting a unicorn in charge of a rainbow. So my vote is no. It's a no from me. And that was a podcast report.
All right. Thank you very much. It was an interesting topic this week. You know, it's kind of difficult always to say, like, how sort of much of a political movement there is behind this idea, right? You know, the Cape Exit guys and them will say, well, you know, we did the survey and all these people said they're interested in a referendum and whatever. But, you know, I think I have basically the same view as you on this one. And, you know, there's so many things you can say about this idea one way or the other. But I think for me, the bottom line is that this feels like what we might call a silver bullet solution. This is a particular hobby horse of mine, is that all the time we see this in politics, people get really caught up with an idea. If we just do this one thing, everything will be different and the whole world will change. You know, I think that BEE should be abolished. And while I think that would be a real good, I'm not under any illusion that that would come anywhere close to fixing our enormous problems as a society. In fact, I think we'd need, you know, many others. And the problem with silver bullet solutions is they create sort of these kind of intense emotional moments, like, oh, we just need to push for this one thing. And it's always chasing the unicorn, chasing the dragon. You never actually get to it, because even if you achieve your silver bullet, it always turns out to never be quite as effective as you hope for. And I think the assumption always among kind of the Cape independence advocates has been, the independent Cape would be just the same as the Western Cape is now, but better, right?
Like 100%.
You can just solve all the problems that it has.
Yeah, no.
And it would change everything.
Yeah, sure. And I love your idea of the silver bullet. And we're in South Africa, and that's my new mission, to make people understand that we live in a very complex country. We live first world, third world, the future, and all kinds of stuff in between at the same time. So that we lack the capacity to deal with complexity. And this silver bullet idea is exactly that, that you pick a single lane, whereas we have to teach ourselves to deal with a lot of different situations at the same time. Complexity and our capacity to deal with it, I think, might be the biggest savior here. I would go as far as to say, as these Cape Exit guys, at some stage, somebody has to call them out as frauds, because they must know it's not going to happen. And just the fervor and the emotional push for it's your right. And they're thinking, guys, you must know it's not happening. So I'm even happy to start saying, this silver bullet thing, you know you're doing it and you know it can't happen. Or they haven't thought it through, which is a worse scenario.
It's not even the sort of first sort of silver bullety thing. I mean, there was a time when I think a lot of people in the kind of mainstream, you know, media intelligentsia, that circle, thought that if we just got rid of Jacob Zuma, everything would be better again. You know, we returned to 2008, and it never works out like that, as we've learned to our horror. I do want to say though that you know, as someone who also puts the microphone in front of their face, I didn't appreciate the rampant, unrestrained assault on me by going after the blocking of the camera with the podcast microphone.
But I can see your face, Nicholas. With respect, I can see your face.
I don't know if that's a positive or negative. But
there's a difference between this and this. Okay, the difference is that all I'm saying is it added to the amusement of the thing, but your offense is noted and appreciated and enjoyed. I spoke to a Pick and Pay, that's the podcast report survey, because, you know, also I do surveys where I speak to random people on the street to get their feel for it. And what's lovely about speaking people on the street, or especially at the tail at the Pick and Pay, is that the interaction is very short. So they have to be very succinct in their feelings. I said, what are we going to do? How do you think this idea about the Cape independence, if we became our own country, it would be good? And she said, yes, because their sense of the immigration, which is completely different to the urban planner and its stats, is that it's just too fast and we can't cope. And she had a specific issue
Yeah.
with the people from Joburg. Says those people, they aren't right, you know. Those people from Joburg, they are corrupt, and that's where the crime comes from. And I said, yes, I know, these people are terrible. Says, and they come here, they don't want to work, they want our water, they want our electricity. Those people have a
I mean,
different
that's true in
agenda. And
my
I'm going,
case.
yes, I said, I'm like, and I'm going, yes, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. So they get a sense that the Cape is now invaded by all these foreigners, and they have a specific pain with the people from Joburg who are considered as some type of colonial force. And she's not wrong. And she's not wrong. And I just agreed with her. I just agreed with her. Because after me, it's enough now,
Yeah, no.
guys. I'm the last one. Stop. No more. Done.
I mean, look, when I'm talking on the airwaves, I'll often talk about the sort of serious reasons for why I moved to Cape Town, right? Oh, the water was out all the time back in Joburg, and we had this problem, and there was a break in here, and the potholes and all that. But that's only like 50% of the reason, right? I'm a big fan of the idea
Fill
that
it.
you should never get too caught up in monocausal explanations, one reason explanations for things, because everything has always got multiple reasons. And the reality is, you know what? I lived in Gauteng my whole life until I was 30, and I thought that I needed a change. And if that means I have to pay higher rent and get more water, well, I'm fine with that.
Listen, yo, I'm going to say that there's possibly other reasons, but far from it. I've already offended you with a microphone comment, so I'm not going to go further into that. But Frans Cronje, common sense guys, I love you guys. Nicholas, I love you guys. All the guys with beards and moustaches and microphones in the same frame, you're awesome. Nicholas, I have to ask you. So behind you, I always see you have a very eclectic bookcase and studio. Let's put it that way. Is the studio in your house?
Yes, the studio is in my house. The studio is my office and also the room where I spend most of my time when I'm not at work. So this is my universe, these four walls around me.
Fantastic. Now, the decision to put a globe visible, was that a conscious decision? There's a globe in the background.
I think someone in a comment section once referred to me as some sort of evil globalist because they pointed as evidence that I had a globe in the background. But the real reason is that I just like maps and I like globes, and I had a globe, and that was it.
Well, it does definitely send a message that I'm a man who understands the world because I can see the big picture. So definitely that in the books, it definitely sends that message.
Well, I certainly aspire to, but whether I actually achieve it or not is a very different question.
Thank you very much.
Indeed. Thank you very much, everyone. We hope you enjoyed the show today, and we will be back tomorrow with the normal Daily Friend show. We'll see you next month on the podcast report. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.